Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Happy Wednesday, folks, and as you try to get through your midweek, it's now time for an all-new edition of Listen In with KNN. Now, today on Listen In with KNN, I'm bringing in a top-tier Terp. Yes, shout out to Terp Nation, as I welcome in the one and only Mr. David Steele to the show. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with KNN.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sports Person Award nominee.
Right, it's time for Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week Award winner, where today I'm awarding Black Girls Golf, LLC. Now, if you haven't heard about them, you need to find out about this great organization that is the largest golf community for Black women. Now, the founder of Black Girls Golf, Ms. Tiffany Fitzgerald, said this, "I founded Black Girls Golf in 2011 after spending several years in corporate America and noticing how many opportunities were available to my male colleagues who played golf." So obviously she thought she wanted the same opportunities for women. And in a world where she didn't see many women that looked like herself, she wanted to provide that pathway to connect minority African-American women to the sport of golf. Because everybody that knows about golf know a lot of decisions are made on the golf green. So yes, including everybody making golf more inclusive. Now, Black Girls Golf is not a competitive league. They say they're a safe space to connect with like-minded women who want to learn, practice, and just play golf. I'm awarding them for working with the PGA and the LPGA professionals, as well as other golf industry professionals, to promote a more diverse and inclusive environment. BGG hosts meetups and events to grow their community and help golf professionals welcome Black women to the game. So without further ado, congrats once again to Black Girls Golf for earning honors as this week's Kelsey's Do Good Sports Organization of the Week, presented right here on Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports 1340 AM and 96.9 FM. It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our special guest.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now that time to get into the meat of the show and welcome in our special guest, NFL writer David Steele. David, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you, Kelsey?
I'm wonderful. Anytime I'm in the presence of Terps like you, it's always a good day and I'm in a good mood. Just automatically.
Well, you should be. You know, you spread that Terp love. That's how it's exactly how it's supposed to work.
You know, we support each other.
Yes, we always do. I tell people all the time, it's like every time I go over to campus, I meet somebody who's special and on their way up in the business, and here you are now. It's amazing.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I still remember meeting you as an undergrad, and it's so cool now, of course, to still be in touch and still just follow your awesome career. And, I mean, that's why, you know what, I'm going to get into your bio for people that might not know you, even though they should know you, if they are a true sports fan. So I'm going to get into it, and then we'll just ask you a couple questions. Is that cool?
That is great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. So David Steele writes about the NFL for Sporting News, which he joined in 2011 as a columnist. He has previously written for AOL Fan House, the Baltimore Sun, the San Francisco Chronicle, and Newsday, covering the NBA, college basketball, and football, as well as Major League Baseball and the 2000 Summer Olympics. He co-authored Olympic champion Tommy Smith's 2007 autobiography, Silent Gesture. He has won awards from the Associated Press, the California News Publishers Association, the Florida Sports Writers Association, the National Association of Black Journalists, and the Association of Black Media Workers. And he was nominated for an NCAA, NAACP Image Award. He is a native of Washington, D.C., and a graduate, again, of the University of Maryland College Park. I had to throw that back in there because that's how much I love Maryland. But, David, it's an honor to have you. I mean, I just want to get into it. I mean, what first put you into sports writing? I mean, what got you into, you know, what you do now?
This is what I've always loved. I've always loved sports, and I've always loved writing. Actually, I love reading more than anything, and I just is just something I've always been immersed in, and the things that I really threw myself into the most, just, you know, when I was just a little kid, even younger than you, which is hard to believe, but just a kid, I've just read, and I got to the point of deciding what do I want to do with my career, what do I want to major in college. Say, hey, if I'm fairly good at writing, at least I thought I was at the time. And, and since I love sports, let me take a shot at this. There was a surprising number of professors and instructors at Maryland, believe it or not, as many, many years ago, before there was ever such a thing as, you know, the Shirley Povich sports journalism program.
Yes, that we have now, yep.
It's still an amazing thing to me because everybody who came through the school back then, as a sports journalist, they all have stories of professors telling them to do something serious with your career.
Wow.
You know, stop playing around with sports. And I had a lot of people telling me that. Thankfully, not everybody, but a pretty decent amount of people. And that's why it's so gratifying to see people who can specialize in sports over at Maryland and a lot of other schools now. But that honestly didn't deter me, and I was able to go from Maryland onto the career that you described. I started out actually in St. Petersburg, Florida, and got sort of a lot of opportunities to move up after that. And you know, and interestingly enough, I'm looking at my little calendar right now, I'm about 3 weeks away from my 7th anniversary at the Sporting News.
Wow, that's so amazing.
That's right. March 1st will be my 7th anniversary. So.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm sure it passed so quickly.
It flies, yeah, because I can remember the day it all started there. And it means a lot to me because just having an opportunity to be on a national platform, I mean, it was a big enough deal to be on a daily newspaper because that's always what I dreamed of. But to be at a place like Sporting News that, you know, I used to read back when it was on the newsstand every single week, and I used to actually have a subscription to it for a long time as well. To see my name associated with it really means a lot to me still to this day.
Wow. I mean, every time I see my name in a byline or, you know, whether it's on TV or even on the radio, it still hits me because I feel like I'm just like you, where I'm still living out my dream, and it's such an honor and a privilege. And like you, it started when I was young. You know, I continued at Maryland, and now it's great to see that we're both doing what we love. And, I mean, David, every time I see you in a press box, it's really an honor because you've written so many great pieces. But I want to talk about the piece that you co-authored with Tommy Smith, because I know that meant a lot to you, and everybody that knows his story and what it meant for him to be an Olympic champion. I want you to kind of just describe what that experience was like writing his autobiography.
It still, to this day, is kind of the crowning achievement of my professional life, honestly. I mean, if for some reason I was never able to do this again from now on, it means a lot to me that that I was able to do that. I mean, it means a lot, obviously. There's really no feeling like, I mean, with everything you just said about what it means to see your name on a publication or a podcast or a piece of art, to see it on the cover of a book just tops everything that I can ever possibly describe experiencing. And I can still envision that moment as well. But knowing that it was in collaboration with somebody who was one of my heroes growing up and who was somebody that inspired me, not just as a young journalist, but as a black person.
Right.
And this is, you know, this is how it was for everybody that grew up what I did. And it's still an amazing thing that he still has that sort of impact on people to this day, both him and John Carlos from the A's Olympics. And it's still very strange to think that this is the 50th anniversary of their protest this year.
Oh my God. I can't believe it's been that long.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Wow.
50
oh my
years,
God.
And they are still both with us, and that's something that's worth celebrating all the time.
Yes.
But it all sort of came about because we were, you know, he he and John Carlos, they're the springboard for their, you know, athletic and social exploits was San Jose State University. And at the time, I was working for the San Francisco Chronicle, so their names were still huge in the Bay Area. I had an opportunity to speak to him for a story back in 1999 while he was still teaching down in Southern California at Santa Monica Junior College. He was coaching and teaching, and that's sort of been his great vocation since his athletic career ended. I had an opportunity to speak to him for a column, sort of an end of the millennium column, about the great figures of the 20th century. Once I did that and sort of spread it around, that sort of established a relationship between us. And then once I found out that he was interested in writing his life story, I said, I would love to be a part of this. And once we sat down and talked about it and discussed how we were going to do it and what he wanted to say and how he wanted to say it, we just put our heads together and said, let's do this. And about, as it turns out, about 8 years later, just shows what the process is like. The book came out in 2007, the year before the 40th anniversary, and now we just sort of went past the now it's so strange that we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of that now.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's the book is now 11 years old, and there's still, you know, a lot of interest in his story and his life and in that book.
Yeah, I mean, it's so amazing that you got to be a part of such an historic book in that sense. And I don't know, have you had a chance to go down to the African American Museum in D.C. and actually see the replica statue they have in there?
That was one of the first places I aimed for.
I'm sure.
I finally got the opportunity to go down there.
Yeah.
And it is, it's kind of overwhelming, and it sort of puts everything that you do as a professional journalist in perspective, to know that you were really kind of a part of a historic moment in a way, although you obviously were not there for that. You were part of the story that makes that come alive for people decades and decades later. I mean, you know, my hope is that, like with every book, you know, people are going to be looking at it, reading it, and researching it and referencing it, you know, forever. I mean, you know, it's still mind-blowing that you can, you know, do that. That's sort of the power of the printed word, and to know that moment means so much to everybody, that it's in a museum like that, and knowing what that museum really means to us and to this entire country and to the world, and to know that you are part of the first person telling of his story to everybody. It always means something. Anything that happens with him, with John Carlos, with their stance, with their families, it always means something special to me, because I feel so privileged that he invited me in to tell that story with him. So, I did get a chance to see that. I've had a chance to see the statue they did of him. It's also, that's part of the book that I did with him, the statue of them out at San Jose State University.
Yes.
Every time there's a tribute to them someplace, you know, I always hear about it and hear about it directly from them. The Raiders love him. they're deeply, deeply connected with him, and he to them. You know, so when they played in Mexico City the season before last, he was the guy who lit the torch.
Yes, I remember that.
Stadium for the game. So
That's huge, right?
Yeah, he still has that sort of impact on people all these years later. So, you know, what he did is going to resonate forever. You know, people forget who won gold medals. I mean, his was a pretty dramatic moment when he won that gold medal, you know, back in history and all.
Right.
But what he did after that on a much larger scale and on a much bigger stage is something that's going to go on forever.
Right. It's something we'll always talk about, we'll always remember. And it really changed the course of history, and it got people talking. I mean, that's what's, you know, so iconic about it, and that's why it's so amazing that you had a chance to put those words to paper and pen and put it in a book, because, as you said, it'll live on forever, long past both of our times. You know, it'll always be a story there for people to read, so we can continue to pass down history. And talking about passing down history, last but not least, I want to ask you, out of all the awards you've gotten, which one is the most important and why?
Wow.
Putting you on the spot.
it's pretty, you know, it's pretty mind blowing to think that I actually have a choice of awards.
Yeah, that's a good thing, right?
To talk about. That's a great thing. Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of, it's again, it's very humbling to think of it that way. I'll say that the runner up Yeah, I'll start with the runner up. Yeah, being nominated for an NAACP Image Award in the writing category for that book was just jarring. And almost like when I heard that our name was part of that, that's pretty mind blowing. It's one of those things where you hear, oh, you know, it doesn't matter if you won or lost. It really means a lot just to be nominated. That really is true.
Right. It's true. That's
you
huge.
Don't think about it until you're actually in
that
situation.
It's huge.
Yeah, it is. It is enormous. We were like one of, you know, I think it was like five selections of biographies and autobiographies published that year in the entire country that the NAACP chose to honor. And mm-hmm. so, you know, just being one of those five is just an incredible achievement for me, and it just really made me just burst with pride. I felt better for him, of course, because that what a great stage for his story to be told on, and for it to be honored by a group like the NAACP. Number one, though, would be that I received in 2009 a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Association of Black Media Workers. You had mentioned them earlier when you were running off my list of credentials. They were the first organization of black journalists in Baltimore. They were the NABJ local chapter in Baltimore for like 30, 35 years. And now there's a chapter in Baltimore that's called the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists. It's the outgrowth of the ABMW.
Okay.
And they gave me their Lifetime Achievement Award back in 2009, and I was nominated by my colleagues at the Sun, and they were all there when I got the award, and it was down at the Reginald Lewis Museum in Baltimore. You know, my sister, who's also a professional journalist, was able to come up for that. All my colleagues from the Sun were there, many of them who were in sports, who embraced me when I came to the Sun. Back in 2005, which was, you know, pretty close to a homecoming for me, you know.
Right.
So to get honored like that and to know that I had that kind of an impact, just in sort of a pretty short amount of time in this area, it kind of brought things full circle for me. It's like, you know, what I'd wanted to do getting into this, like to be a big name, you know, to have sort of a big, have a large amount of clout. You know, in my home area where people would be able to see me. I mean, you know, just as much as I read the Post growing up, I also read the Sun all the time, and certainly all the time through college, I read the Sun and knew all the people there, and here were those same people, you
honoring
know, standing
you.
And applauding me. So,
amazing. I would say it's great to see things go full circle, because like I said, there's no place like home, David. So to get recognized by your, you know, your hometown where you grew up, and as you said, those journalists you looked up to, there's nothing like it. So, I mean, it's so amazing, you know, just to hear your passion and your energy for that award. And congratulations once again, honestly, on all your success. Very, very proud of you.
Oh, thank you very much. And you'll know that feeling soon enough. You'll you know what I'm talking about. We'll all be there. I say.
Oh,
yeah,
that makes me excited. I'm telling you, I mean, people like you inspire me and let me know, you know, it can happen, and that's what makes me so excited. I mean, you've paved such a great trail, and I'm following behind. And again, one day I hope my name can be next to yours, because that's what I'm aiming. I mean, just with the greats. So again, it's such a pleasure to have you on. And David, I want to get into the show, because obviously you're a sports guy, and there's a lot of sports to talk about in the area. I'm going to talk about a team that I know you know very well, being from Washington, D.C., and that's the Washington Wizards, as I kick it off with my Doing It Big in the DMV segment. But things aren't looking the greatest for the Wizards right now, David, because they've been pretty much injury-plagued. I mean, to start the week, they only had 7 players in practice. They had Otto Porter running point guard in practice since, of course, Tim Frazier had nasal surgery on Sunday after that nasty collision he had in their last game. And Thomas Sanaransky did pass the first stage of concussion protocol, but Markieff Morris was out and Jason Smith with illnesses. And then, of course, All-Star Bradley Beal. Yeah, he's been playing some great basketball, so he had the day off. So believe it or not, they actually had to pull a player development manager. to play point guard as well when Otto Player began to play forward with Kelly Oubre Jr. But the Wizards, I mean, they've been playing some good basketball, right? They're fourth in the East, but with all the injuries happening, they're actually considering signing Ty Lawson, Derrick Rose, Ramon Sessions. I mean, a lot of names are in the mix, but I just want to hear from you. I mean, do you think any of those would be the right fit if the Wizards were to sign somebody onto the team to help, you know, pretty much make them back healthy again?
Well, it's great to know that those players are available for them and that they're kind of available all over the league, and for the Wizards to have an opportunity to get one of them in the sort of the circumstances they are would help enormously, because the window's there right now. It's,
right.
You know, their chance to, you know, make a big move in the East is sitting right there in front of them. And it's so strange. I mean, you know, if we've, you know, all the years we follow the Wizards, usually when there's this big, you know, spate of injuries that hits, it's like plague. It's usually when they're like, you know, 12-50 or whatever it is.
One of those years.
Yeah, one of those kind of years. And they're, you know, signing guys like, you know, there's just a series of 10-day contracts and the coach is barely hanging on. And, you know, it's just people are crushing Ernie Grunfeld on in public and all that stuff.
Right.
And we're at and it's really done kind of a 180 within these last couple of years. The fact that you lose a guy of the caliber of John Wall for as long as you have, to be as shorthanded in so many areas that you are, and to still know that, one, you're still in position to do something when all those guys come back, and that you have enough depth to keep your head above water and to sort of pick up the momentum, the adrenaline, or whatever it is that they got on after John Wall went out. You know, that's very encouraging. So if they have an opportunity to take a piece and add to that, and so they'd have a really whole team by the time Wall and all these other guys come back, that would help. Now, I'm very interested. I hope that Ty Law is together enough and that he's gotten past all the other issues
all
that he's dealt with over the years. You know, he would be my ideal choice. I mean, I think I've always thought that he was that kind of player when he was healthy and on straight. I mean, he would seem to be such a perfect fit for what they need. And that's not a knock against Frazier or Satoransky or anything like that. You know, to add him into the mix with all those other guys, to just have options, you know, with a player like him, I think would help enormously. I mean, we've seen Ramon Sessions. You know, he's not a bad fit. You know, he will get you so far. He'll fill the roster out. He'll do certain things that'll help a lot. Derrick Rose, you know, I wish it was the Derrick Rose we all know.
Oh my gosh, if you could go back to that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's unfortunate. It's more like the Derrick Rose that we've seen.
Right.
Like, you know, a minute here.
And,
yeah, that's the problem. And when I first saw his name pop bubble up in relation to this, I was like, I never thought that I would think that. I was like, oh my God, if Derrick Rose is available, you got
to
jump on
him. Right. You used to immediately be like, yes, like, what are you thinking? Sign him, right? But
right.
Late, you can't do that.
You just can't. I mean, there's a lot at stake. There's a lot out there that's possible for them. And there are moves that they can make that just aren't as risky as that.
Right.
You know, you're rolling the dice too much, and people might say, oh, well, it's a kind of a, you know, low risk, high reward kind of move. It's like, it isn't really. Because, you know, every game is important and everything is, every move is valuable. And if you get him out there and you don't know if his heart's in it, you don't know if his health is all worth it, you don't know how long he can go.
So many questions around it.
Yeah, a lot. It's a lot of questions around him. I mean, he may be great for some other team, and he could fool us all and land somewhere else and be the difference and knock the Wizards out of the playoffs.
Wouldn't that be something? I mean, that would be so amazing if he had the comeback story of the year, you know, after getting the boot from the Cavs.
Right, exactly. It would be a great story for him because, I mean, he's still a guy that deep down you root for because of everything that he's gone through with his
career
injuries and all. But it doesn't mean the Wizards have to be the team to do that.
Got you.
I mean, there are better options out there. And I think
so Ty Lawson would be your favorite
percent
of those options if they were to go out. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like you. I think Ty is such a great player. I mean, everybody, I remember his days back in North Carolina. And then, of course, when he came into the NBA with the Denver Nuggets. But then, as you said, I mean, just the side issues, you know, he can't have. But he played strong overseas. And I think, you know, if the Wizards were to get him, I'm like you. I think he would be my top choice. I was a huge Derrick Rose fan when he first came into the league. Who wasn't? Derrick Rose was doing everything. But, of course, the injuries. And as you said, his heart to me is the biggest question. Because I think, you know, physically, I think you can get yourself, you know, to be a caliber NBA player. But mentally, no one can make you mentally feel anything, I don't think. So if his heart isn't in it, I mean, there's nothing the Wizards coaching staff, you know, could do for that. But I'm rooting for Derrick Rose. I mean, I just hope he, you know, gets back to at least somewhat, you know, just his legacy, because really he's writing his own story. But the Wizards, I mean, they're not in a bad place right now. They've been playing well, obviously. They're still fourth in the East. But as you said, the East is such a close race, David. Like, each and every game, as you said, matters. And, you know, of course, that'll make a big difference when we get to the postseason. But with the Wizards, I guess my only thing is Thomas Santoranski actually has been someone who's been getting a lot of praise as of late. He just came off his biggest game of his career where he scored 25 points. That's his biggest game, and of course, from Europe and over here in the NBA. But my thing with him is when he first came to the Washington Wizards, I remember everyone was – it was like sadomania, it felt like, in D.C. because he had a really good, strong showing. But at the same time, I mean, I think he's a solid player, but – is he the one that you forever want in place with the John Wall injured? I don't know. Because, I mean, it's just consistency, you know, that I worry with Thomas Santoranski. But I'm just wondering, I mean, are you singing high to his praises, David? Are you more conservative about your praises for Thomas Santoranski?
Yeah, I'm still sort of, you know, in a wait-and-see mode with him and also
okay.
in a sort of keep him in the proper focus and in the proper role. I don't think that he's a guy that, you know, is obviously going to come along and lift up and play this way every single, you know, every single night
right.
and do everything
right.
at both ends of the floor that you need to know in every aspect of the game. I think that he is a good fit right now. It's not saying that he won't be that kind of a player later.
Right.
I can't necessarily say that he will, though, right now. I think that for what they ask of him, or certainly what they should be asking of him, in my mind, I don't know. I think that what they ask of him should not be to be everything, you know.
Right.
And I
right.
think that would be asking just way too much of him right now. I mean, you know, we tend to fall in love with guys in certain roles when they get on a roll with the things that they do.
Right.
And they're just not able to sustain it. And until he does sustain it, I'm gonna believe that he's not ready to, and that at some point that's gonna level off and somebody else is going to have to pick up the slack. And, I think he's a valuable piece here. I think he helps, but
right.
I think he helps most when everybody's together, when everybody's healthy, you know.
Right.
I don't think you want to ask him to carry things for everybody else.
Right, because that's a lot to ask of him. And I'm like
yeah.
you. I mean, I think he's a solid player, but again, to ask him to have those big games every night, I think that's way too much of an ask. You know, and consistency has been, I think, you know, something that he's kind of struggled with in a sense. But I think he is still a good, solid piece for the Wizards. But if they are able to pick up one of those players we mentioned, I think it would only help them because, of course, as we said, each and every game matters. But now talking of games and what matters, I want to switch over to my Kelsey's Across the Nation segment where, of course, we have kind of the biggest game going on in the world with the Olympics in Pyeongchang. And, I mean, Team USA has a lot of reason to be happy, David. I mean, just 2 days after the Olympics opened, we got a gold medal from a 17-year-old snowboarder. Who would have thought? Redmond Red Girardi really made a name for himself. It was his first Olympics game. I mean, did you get to watch any of his snowboarding feats?
I saw it. As a fact, I didn't get to watch it live. And it's so funny. It's one of the sports that I know that me personally, I sort of tune out on it in between the Olympics. And it's weird because, you know, the X Games are going on all the time. And
right.
And there are things that go on and things like that. And so I focus back in on it during the Olympics. And you're just sort of blown away. By not only what the American stars like him are doing, but just like this the talent around the world, and to see the way that he turned it out at such a young age, and pull that off, and to also think of just what he's able to do and what he did to win
right.
that gold medal compared
right.
to what you're used to see, you know, in the years that that sport has evolved, you're just like, what?
But it's true. Like, honestly, I'm like, I mean, the Winter Olympics, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, you tune in and watch, you know, every now and then, right, because it's so many games. And there's so many sports that, you know, especially if you live in certain parts of the country, you just aren't used to, right, so you're not always watching. But 17 years old, your first games, and you win gold. And I love his family story. They had to do a GoFundMe to get over there. And then America, I think it was United Airlines, gave them tickets to get over there. So, you know, the family, you know, finally got there. He wins gold. And 17 just seemed to be like the magic age, David, because, of course, the big name, it seemed like, was Chloe Kim, who also won gold in the snowboard half-pipe competition. I mean, just, wow, these young people, I love it, getting their fame, bringing home gold to the country. I mean, it's just, I feel like it's no greater feeling, and that's honestly why I love the games, David, because you just hear these stories of triumphant victories, and then you hear these stories of just young people who just had dreams. And then yet they go to the games and get gold for their country on the biggest stage ever. I mean, I don't think anything can beat, you know, those two winning gold. And like I said, two of the youngest members on the Olympic team. I mean, who would have thought that?
Yeah,
you're competing
exactly.
against the best in the world.
Yeah, and you do. You get caught up in it, especially with the Winter Olympics. I mean, with the Summer Olympics, I think that you know, it's something we're more familiar with. It's
right.
a little more of a build-up. I know for me personally, the Winter Olympics, almost in a sense, it's a weird thing for a sports person, it's kind of snuck up on me. All of a sudden, I looked at it and said, oh, opening ceremonies are coming up. And
right.
there were, you know, things going, there were a couple of events that started even before the opening ceremonies. But to know that just within the first few days, you've seen excellence at this level. And
right.
if you've seen it, like you said, right, to see youngsters do the things that they do on such a big stage against such world-class competition. I mean, this isn't one of those sports where, you know, the U.S. invented it, so of course they're going to sweep all the medals, and
exactly.
no one else knows how to do this. So, you know, it's some sort of, you know, not so much rigged, but just kind of, you know, dominated by one place that only that has the resources to do it. I mean,
right.
you know, the entire world is, and, you know, they jumped right in with both feet. With these X-style kind of sports,
yeah,
and they put on. You would think that they were going to be the favorites, but you're right. These kids now, Chloe Kim, she's been great for a while. I mean, it's weird to say that about a 17-year-old, but I think everyone sort of saw this coming with her. Although you didn't see her showing out exactly the way she did. Just sort of, she passed everybody and all. Yeah.
98.5, just amazing. As you said, she's been good, but I think everybody questions, you know, are you ready for that big stage as a youngster?
Yeah.
Because I think on the ice skating side, Nathan Chin, you know, his first performance wasn't the Nathan Chin that we knew. And he's also a youngster, you know, on the Olympic skating side, but it seemed like his nerves kind of got to him because we didn't skate, you know, we didn't see him skate the way he had been his entire career.
Right, yeah, no, and that's a great example of it. And that just sort of, you know, tells you again that, you know, Chloe and Red really took the stage and just exploded in every way. And you know, they're young enough that they're actually, you know, if they keep this up, we're going to see them in 4 years.
Isn't that
it's
exciting?
Just, it's crazy.
And they'll still be young. It's just crazy to think about. And they could have, what, another medal, you know, and they're not even 25 yet. It's just, it's so incredible to think. They were fun to watch. I liked Chris Master a lot, too, from the U.S., 29-year-old who won silver in singles luge. That was so much fun to watch. Because, of course, I don't even know how you practice for that in that competition, but he's the first American man to ever medal in the event since 1964.
Yeah.
Like, what? That's crazy. But, I mean, he was so much fun to watch. And it was cool seeing that he took on these guys, you know, who were so, so good at the sport. And then anytime you bring home a medal the first time for this country, I mean, he will forever be in the history books.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing, because, again, that's a sport that's kind of the reverse of what we were talking about.
Yeah,
I just said,
oh,
just
my
like,
gosh.
You're so, I mean, year after year, the Winter Olympics, you see certain countries excel in luge, in bobsled, and just in all the variations with men and women. And the U.S., if you're in contention for maybe a bronze, you're doing something tremendous. And if you finish fifth, it's cause for celebration, and you want to go medal. And it's just that's just pretty mind blowing. Again, these are sports that, you know, the sort of dedication that it takes to excel in this country in sports like that, when it almost comes natural to the Nordic countries and the you know, Central and Eastern European
they
country.
They grew up with it.
Yeah, this is their lives. They grew up with it the way we grew up with track and basketball and baseball.
Right, and that's why Summer Olympics appeals to us more, I feel like.
Exactly, yeah, that's what it does. And so that's why, again, like when I talk about stuff sneaking up on us, and you see sort of the names that the USOC and NBC are sort of pushing at you in the weeks leading up to, and you're just like,
right.
Okay, if you say so, I'll...
Well, yeah, you don't know them, right? Like, you really just don't know. You're like, okay, they said to watch them, I'm watching them, right? Because,
yeah.
Right, you don't get to see them. And that's why I love, though, that these athletes get to, you know, really make their mark during these winter games. Because any other time, we wouldn't know about them. I mean, I talked about the youngsters. And I will say the Luge, those announcers are probably the most fun announcers I have ever listened to. They made that sport so much fun. I mean, it was so much enthusiasm, and I was watching. But I still, when I was watching David, I'm like, how do you practice for a sport like that? Like, I would be scared to death having my body on that board going through those big turns on ice. So I give everybody props, honestly, who competed in that. But the big story I know from the games was, of course, U.S. figure skater Adam Rippon, who stole the show. With his performance in ice skating, he's already been outspoken. But, of course, I mean, he's really made a name for himself in the fact that he is the first openly gay athlete from the U.S. to medal in the Winter Games. That was huge. I mean, what do you think that says about this country?
Boy.
A loaded question, right? But, I mean, everybody was talking about him, and it wasn't just for his performance, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, it makes you appreciate him even more, knowing mm-hmm. that he willingly chose to carry that with him to speak out, you know, when he wanted to and how he wanted to and to the people that he wanted to. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about that. And,
we are addressing it.
Yeah, being bold enough to do that because, you know, it's frustrating, and it's something that you and I understand. It's like, you know, to be talking about the first this or the first that in 2018.
Right.
It's honestly infuriating. It's honestly hard to celebrate something like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it should never be stuff that you're still talking about in 2018, certainly not in the Olympics.
Right.
In something where the United States is supposed to be the standard that all others are supposed to be following.
Right.
You know, and he is the guy who kind of stuck out there. I mean, with the support of, you know, family, friends, the figure skating, the U.S. figure skating community, you know, they've been all behind him. But clearly, everybody has not been. You know,
right.
People have pushed back, you know, openly against him.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, go on social media; you'll see so many negative comments.
Yeah, it's infuriating because again. With all the rhetoric that goes on all the time, to be looking at an Olympic champion, you know, to look at somebody who is going out there and is representing your country,
mm-hmm.
you know, in these games in front of the entire world on a global stage, on, you know, audience of billions of people on TV. People are, mm-hmm. you know, setting their alarm clock, staying up at crazy hours of night to watch all this.
Right, just to watch it, yeah.
Right, and they're thrilled by all this. And then you get slapped down, you know, for a reason like that.
Right.
You know, to get put down and to be treated like you're not really American or you're not really somebody we're going to admire, somebody we're going to praise, somebody we're going to treat the way we have treated all the other Olympians in the past, that you don't fit the so-called standard that we've set for Olympians in the year before. It's like he's out there saying, no, I fit that standard. I go beyond it because your standard wasn't good enough because your standard didn't include me.
Right.
And he put himself out there and said that, and he has not backed down. He has not let anybody silence him. He has not let anybody intimidate him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, he should be everybody's hero. I think
why I love his story, you know, because I think it's something that, you know, so many people can appreciate. Because it always takes a first, right? And hopefully the next games will have more, because hopefully he showed it's okay. And guess what? Yes, you're going to always have people who don't like you for whatever reason, right? But he shows he's like, that's not phasing him. That's not messing with him. He did such a beautiful performance in the Olympics, you know. And his story is another one of overcoming. He missed the Vancouver Olympics in 2010. He missed Sochi in 2014. He wanted to get there. He got there and got there being himself. He didn't hide it, which
mm-hmm.
I love.
Yeah,
I absolutely.
And that,
love.
And you're right. When, you know, in the years to come, you know, boys and girls who felt like who were oppressed and repressed enough that they really wouldn't even go onto the ice,
right,
to try to do that. you know, much less try to compete and try to go to that level. You know, they're all going to be encouraged to do that. And it'll become, as you know, we've heard all the time, it's like, you know, it'll be something that is going to be a part of them, but won't be the only thing that defines them from now on.
Right. And I think
and they will not have to carry that burden because Adam Rithman is carrying it for them.
Wow. So well said. And as you said, I mean, hopefully in the next Olympics, we won't be saying the first of anything because, again, as you said, it's 2018. It should not be any first, especially for a country like ours. You know, as you said, when we set the standard, I mean, by now it should be okay to be whatever you want, come out however you want, because we should, I think, you know, all understand these people represent America, and America represents so many types of people, not just one. I think that's what he represents. So I love his story, but I want to switch to a fun story. I don't know if you saw, but what did you think about North Korea sending more than 200 cheerleaders to the Winter Olympics? They're calling them the Army of Beauties. Good tactic for North Korea.
Well, you know, it must be because people are talking about it. People are really wrapped up in it.
They are. I was in such shock. I was like, what cheerleader? And then I saw them, and I mean, they were doing everything the cheerleaders do. I was very impressed by them.
Yeah.
I feel like it showed us another side of North Korea that we don't get to see all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the crazy thing. That's why, you know, at its best, the Olympics can do things just like this because, you know, no matter what, their leader and their government and the people in power do, those are people there.
Right.
They're residents, they're people, they're living their lives, you know, they love athletes, they love their fellow citizens, they love other citizens. It's like they always say, it's like we have more in common than we have differences. You know, we have more in common with the people of North Korea than we have in opposition to the people of North Korea.
Right.
So they're out there, you know, they're competing, they're fighting. And it's funny because we used to go through this, you know, a little before your time, so you have to excuse me on that. We went through this with the Russians and the Cubans, you know, for decade after decade after decade at the Olympics. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to the networks. I mean, it was ABC for a long time and then it was NBC for a long time. To not just, you know, sort of lock in on the red, white, and blue flag waving and say, you know, and not just promote our athletes, but, you know, seemingly promoting only one way of life, you know, promote all the athletes and promote all the people, you know, show us the people, show us where they're from, where they live, how they live, and show what they've produced and how they've produced it. So you had an opportunity to admire, you know, great athletes, you know, boxers and sprinters and skiers and ski jumpers.
Right.
From countries that are, quote unquote, our enemies. You know, these are supposed to be, quote unquote, the enemy. And yet, you know, both North and South Korea, they marched in together. They're competing together. And here's this group of North Korea cheerleaders, you know, doing the things that they're doing and entertaining everybody and resisting the idea that, oh, we're supposed to not fall for this, you know, propaganda and everything. It's like, well, it's not propaganda. You know, they may want to use it as propaganda. It's like, well, we're not going to let you change the way that we feel about the human beings that we care about and want to live safe, happy lives in North Korea, not under the oppressive thumb of, you know, of a tyrant, which, hey, we could, you know, we could go on for many hours about that and other countries, you know, but you
really
know,
could.
Another,
we'll save that
comment.
For another show. Right. Yeah. Well, that'll be another show, right? How much you can go on about that. But, you know, I love just how open and honest you are. But actually, I mean, you said it so well. The Olympic Games, I mean, so much, you know, that's why I always have loved sports, David, because I think it's always been able to bring us together somehow, no matter our differences. You know, like you said, countries that don't even like each other, you know, can all come to the Games and people cheer on their country and just love seeing the best of the best. And that's what I think makes sports so unique, but especially the Olympics. You know, when you get to bring everybody together to essentially just watch games. I mean, that just tells you the power, you know, of sports. And I love something that you kept talking about, and that's the diversity aspect of it. And something that came out on social media and the Huffington Post, I thought it got good and negative reviews, was the fact that they wrote a story about how the U.S. figure skating team has already set a record because out of its 14 members, they have 7 skaters, which is obviously half the team are Asian American. So it was a lot, and I loved that. I loved seeing all the pride and I loved that it showed the diversity of this country. But then, David, of course, on the other side, unfortunately on social media, you had a lot of comments of people saying they are not American. So I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on, you know, just this overall ice skating team for the Olympics, of course, half of them being Asian American. I mean, what do you think that says about U.S. figure skating? I mean, and what would you, what message would you send to those who don't agree with them being on the U.S. Olympic team?
Well, it's,
I know it's an action-packed question.
Well, you
giving you a lot today.
You asked the best question. I ain't lying. You know, so
giving you a lot. I know you can handle it.
That won't. I'm glad you have that faith in me. But see, it's interesting because I remember, and I'm a little angry myself because I can't remember the year, but I believe it was 1992,
mm-hmm.
Or it was either 92 or 94, when Michelle Kwan won the gold medal. It was like her and I can't remember who it was she beat, but I remember that one of the newspapers, I think what it was, Michelle Kwan got the silver medal, lost out to Tara Lipinski. That's when they had their duel. And one of the newspapers headlines that day was American beats Kwan for gold medal.
Wow.
And I never forgot that. And they were taking the task for it. And people literally had to remind everybody in this country that Michelle Kwan was American too.
Isn't that something? Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're more than 20 years late, you know, after that now.
Right.
And we're still sort of fighting the same battles. But
mm-hmm.
the people who are on the front line, you know, I would bet, and I've not gone to speak to every single, you know, person.
Right.
I don't know their entire story. I just know that, you know, I have a pretty good idea of it. You know, they're from the West, from California. They they grew up here. They were immersed in, you know, American culture. They're Americans. That's all
right
too. But I would bet everything in the world that they were inspired by the Michelle Kwans and the Christy Yamaguchis and
mm-hmm.
and skaters like that in the past. I mean, they're icons the way that, like we said, Tommy Smith and Jesse Owens and
right.
you know, athletes like that were for us. You know.
Right.
And
it makes a huge
you know,
difference, I think, when you see somebody that looks like you, you know, achieve what you want to achieve.
Absolutely. 100%.
You can look in the mirror, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, somebody in an area that you want to be in and somebody who has shown what's possible for you and what you're capable of
mm-hmm.
in a country where your parents or grandparents, you know, came here, you know, and overcame incredible odds to come here
right.
and allow you to live the life that you are and to give you the opportunities that you
right.
have. And so, you know, they're living those opportunities. I mean, and as you said before, you talked about the, you know, the great unifying power that sports has. Sports is one of those things that actually does at its best. And it's not
right.
always at its best, but when it's at its best, it brings everybody together. It gives us something to share, something
right.
to identify with, something
right.
that we can sort of, you know, cherish together.
Right.
And if you're coming from another country, you know, sports is a great venue for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
maybe better than a whole lot of other places. These are people who are probably going to get called a whole bunch of things in
right.
school or the playground and all these other places.
Right.
But out there in the rink, if you go out there and perform better than everybody else,
right?
You know,
you
and give them
sport,
something to
right?
cheer for. Well, yeah, that's what, yeah.
And I love
so.
What you just said. I mean, Chloe Kim's dad literally said after she won, he said, "That's the American dream. That's why I sacrificed."
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
and it counts for everybody.
This country. Now she won a gold medal for this country. Wow.
For this country.
I mean, basically, right? Like, that just tells
I mean.
You.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
It seems so simple, doesn't it?
Yes, right? Like, there you go. There's an example. And that's why, you know, unfortunately, you will always have the negativity when it comes to diversity. But I think the more that we stomp those people out, you know, with words of kindness, words of empowerment, I think, you know, it'll speak to them. And interestingly enough, David, this year's Team USA was actually the most diverse team in the Winter Olympics history because they had 11 Asian Americans in total, 10 African American athletes, and 2 openly gay members of the team.
Yeah.
But interestingly, you know, we talked about the Summer Olympics and the team that went to the 2016 Summer Games, I'm sure that you remember, in Rio de Janeiro. The U.S. winter team, of course, doesn't have the same representation because in the Summer Games in 2016, African-American athletes actually made up 20% of the summer team, where in the Winter Olympics now they only make up 4% of the U.S. team. So as the U.S. Olympic Committee director said, I mean, he said there's far more work to be done. And I think, you know, those numbers say it all. I always say numbers never lie. And, you know, that's the data. So there you go. But, I mean, we're on the right track, I feel like.
Yeah, if everyone who has sort of watched the Olympics, I mean, no, people just honestly, they, and I know that if you asked them, they told them to be perfectly honest. Maybe you had to give them truth serum. When you think about the Winter Olympics, you think about white people. You really do. That's just historically how it's always been. You know, especially the countries that they come from. You don't see, you know, African or you know, Caribbean or
right.
Asian or East Asian or anything like that. You don't see the big numbers, and you certainly don't see them represented on this team. Certainly not the U.S. team. I mean, we went through a couple of decades of firsts with first, you know, first bobsled number, first luger, first, you know, ice skate. Just there's always this, you know, always a first that has been crossed off. And now to see the numbers that you do, I mean, it was unfathomable. Like me growing up watching, you know, Winter Olympics, you know, back in the 80s, the 70s, you never saw any dark faces. You know, you really did see a just big fest procession of all the same faces. And that's why, again, just to sort of go back to Michelle Kwan, that was like a shocking, you know, vision to see somebody, you know, an American kid with whose face was not the same as everybody else's.
Right.
And to see where we've come since then, the young lady from Northern Virginia, I'm sure I'll get her first name wrong.
But Maybe Viney, right?
Yeah, the speed skater. I mean, what we've, you know, the way that speed skating has taken off with this country, for one thing, has taken off the Olympics and overall, you know, what we've seen from, you know, what we've seen our this country produce in speed skating. And then to see a girl from Ghana make
right?
the team.
Like, you would have never put that all together. I mean,
exactly.
Wow.
If you said that 10 years ago, you know, it would have been like a joke. It would have been like a punchline, somebody's stand-up routine.
Isn't that something?
And outside of it, I mean, there's a bobsled team from Nigeria.
The ladies' outfit. That is so huge. And as you said, I mean, I think, you know, the Winter Olympics, of course, we want it to get more diverse. I think it's harder, as you said, because, of course, a lot of those sports and in countries where they are predominantly, and you know, African-American or black people, I mean, sometimes we don't have access to those sports.
Right.
You know, so I think it's something, and, you know, Cool Runnings comes to my mind, the movie.
Right.
but, you know, it's just something I hate to say, but it's kind of something, you know, that we have to somehow learn how to expose, you know, those countries too, because I think we see it happening in the U.S. in the sense that I know hockey has and NHL has a program, Hockey is for Everyone, where they actually take hockey to urban communities, of course, to expose it to more minorities. So, I mean, if we can, in a sense, and I'm not trying to solve the biggest problem that the Olympics has, but who knows, maybe I have it and they'll pay me for my idea, but if we can somehow, you know, do a program like that with the Olympic, and maybe the Olympic Committee could oversee it, to introduce those countries, you know, to new sports where you don't usually have it. Like Jamaica, we know they're fast, right? They can run. But maybe, you know, let's go, you know, bring some experts from, I don't know, the hockey team over there, you know, and teach them how to do some hockey. Like, I think it's just, you know, it's always about exposure. Because I think
it can
always be what you see. And if you see it, you know, you might want to do it. Because I'm watching the Winter Olympics. If I could get back in and get back in shape, you know, I might try one of those crazy sports. But right now, I don't feel like breaking any tendons. But, you know, it's all about exposure. So if you see it, you know, you never know if you can be it. But the Olympics is always one of my most favorite times. And I want to stay on the topic of favorite times, David, because it's also someone else's favorite time. And that is the truth, Mr. Paul Pierce. Who recently, of course, had his number 34 jersey take its place alongside other Celtics legends in Boston's 17 championship banners. Wow, I know Paul Pierce is so happy seeing that. And I don't. Did you get a chance to watch the jersey retirement ceremony?
I did get a chance to see
overall of it?
I thought it was great because Celtic jersey retirements really are a special thing. In basketball and in sport overall, because it's, for one, it's a strange thing to look at all the numbers they've retired, but then you think they all deserved it. This is all something very meaningful, you know, to the franchise, and it sort of gives you the idea, you know, where, and it's even if you grew up hating the Celtics, which, you know, we're not going to even get into.
We won't get into that, right?
We'll leave that aside for your own personal feelings aside and everything. But you do, you know, you do respect what that franchise has been.
Yeah.
And to know that he stands among the greats in that franchise's history.
Right.
Shows you that he was just not an ordinary player.
Right.
And you can tell with players like him and certain other players of that caliber when it means more to be mm-hmm. with a certain organization than to be with another.
Yes.
And Paul Pierce made it very clear, and the Celtics thankfully made it very clear as well, that he was always going to be a Celtic. You know,
yes.
despite everything he did here with the Wizards, and there's a little thing
right.
with the Nets, and the thing with the Clippers,
mm-hmm.
and all that, and that's sort of
right.
the route that players take, you know. But he's a Celtic at heart.
Yes.
You know, won a championship with them, and had some great
2008.
Years. Yeah, and you know, even before that, and it's like, you know, it's not a thing that people forget or gloss over,
mm-hmm.
but during his prime with the Celtics, he really did carry that team to heights that
mm-hmm.
That most other individuals could not do, because those Celtics were not, you know, they were kind of a mess. I mean, they were kind of crazy. They were,
mm-hmm. right.
They were weird, yet,
but
he had
too.
To make a decision all the time.
Right, right. I mean, I'm just so excited for Paul Pierce. As you said, I mean, he goes up with the greats in Boston. We all know they have had such a great franchise. Paul Pierce is the 22nd number retired, so that just tells you about
yeah.
the Celtics history. You know, you have Larry Bird, Dennis Johnson. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. And seeing him get emotional, you know, when he thanked his mom and his wife and his three children,
mm-hmm.
You know, that touched me a lot. And as you said, I mean, Paul Pierce has had a tremendous career. You know, you had the video from Magic Johnson and Kobe saluting him. I know
mm-hmm.
that meant a lot to him. And then having some of his teammates from the 2018 when they
yeah.
won. I mean, Rajon Rondo, of course. You know, that's just... That's just huge. I think that's huge. And Paul Pierce has been such a tremendous player. And I don't want to take away from his shine, but I got to be real with you, David. And I want to ask you a question that has been going around. Do you think Paul Pierce is a Hall of Fame player?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. I don't even hesitate on that. He was one of the defining players of his era.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that you can't talk about his time in the league without talking about what he did.
Right.
And when a team like the Celtics, you know, when they win a championship after the long drought that they had and the kind of drought that they've had since then, because they're fighting
yeah,
a way to get
right.
back to where they were, you know, back in those days, in the big three days.
Right.
Yeah. I think he belongs. And, you know, that's saying a lot, and you're right. I know that it's something that mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of differences between, you know, on that.
Yeah.
I mean,
already I've seen so many.
Yeah, and it's kind of confusing. I mean, you can't really, you know, account for everybody's feelings about players. They have
right.
they have weird preferences and hatreds and bitterness and things
mm-hmm.
like that about guys.
They do.
Down
bottled
the
up.
Yeah, it's so weird the ways and times that it comes out. I always thought Paul Pierce was one of the best out there, one of the
mm-hmm.
most dangerous out there, and the guy that when he came to town, he was the guy you had to stop.
Right.
That's all
right.
Good. If he somehow
he's
happened, but he was so hard to stop. Yes.
Right. Paul Pierce is a true player. And I'm like you. I think he is a Hall of Fame member. I mean, just look at his game. I mean, I could go on and on about his stats, but he was such a tremendous player. And as you said, what he did, especially in his prime with Boston, no one can take away. And honestly, even as he got older, he was still a solid player. Remember what he did here in Washington?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he helped carry that team. And, I
yeah.
mean, who could forget that foot on the line that, of course, ended that series. But, you know, I won't even get into that. I won't get into my emotions today. Paul Pierce is just such a tremendous player. And, you know, I'm so proud of him. But I will say it'll be interesting, and I'm sure we already addressed it. So many people have so many different opinions on him. So it'll be interesting, you know, to see how that all plays out. But staying with opinions, I want to go to my Kelsey's Are You Serious Right Now segment, where ESPN's The Undefeated launched Dear Black Athlete this week, David, and it caused a lot of different emotions on social media. So for those who didn't see it or don't know about it, it's a series of conversations featuring prominent African-American athletes and civic and community leaders. So did you get a chance to watch it at all, David?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of the key, you know, discussions and
right.
moments and figures that were there.
Right.
The NFL players, Anquan Boldin.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Kobe Bryant talk, so yeah.
Right.
And I'm at some point going to watch the entire thing because it's an important, you know, it's an important program, an important
yeah.
endeavor by
right.
ESPN. It's the sort of thing they should be doing.
I like that you said that, because that leads me to my next question that I was going to ask, because, you know, there are some people, if you see on social media, I mean, I feel like it's been half and half. I've seen a lot of comments that, quite frankly, have been racist, in a sense, to what ESPN did. And then, of course, you have the other side, who I'm on, where, you know, I think it was so empowering to see that. And I think it started the conversations that we need to have. And I say this all the time on the show, but it's still, when it comes to race, people are still very sensitive about race, and it seems like, you know, we're still not at a point where we can just have open and honest conversations about it. And I like that ESPN and ESPN's The Undefeated started this conversation and addressing it. And I like the athletes, you know, that weren't afraid to be honest and open and share their opinions, because I always say, I mean, no one knows how it is to walk in their shoes, right, but them, because you haven't walked their path. But I love the stories that came from it. Like you, I saw bits and pieces. I didn't get to see the whole thing. But one that stood out to me, David, was Chris Archer's of the Tampa Bay Rays. Mm. And, you know, he talked about how he was raised by his white grandparents and how he's biracial. But, you know, he talked about his childhood where he said he didn't even realize he was black until he was in grade school playing dodgeball. And he had got a guy out. We all remember dodgeball. He got a guy out, and he said, "I don't care that you beat me, Blackie." And he said, "That was the precise moment I realized I was black." You know, he said he holds no grudge against him now. But, you know, just hearing these stories, I think, is so vital and so important. Because I think a lot of times, especially with all that's going on in the sports world, I mean, of course, with the national anthem protest that pretty much dominated every headline, I think pieces like this kind of help to see where people come from. But, of course, my thing is I think it's hard for people who don't agree all the time with things to even give the other side a chance. And I think that's what we saw on social media with some of the negative comments. And you say it's important, but I want to know, like, specifically, I mean, what specifically, why is it important, and why was the time now for ESPN to do a piece like this?
Well, the time was perfect for the reasons you just gave, is because there were athletes and people who were willing to step out and make their feelings known about mm-hmm. what's going on, not only in the larger picture in society,
right.
but also to show a side of themselves that they were either reluctant to show or mm-hmm. that they may have felt pressure from different places not to show, because the general consensus, been, that doesn't mean everybody, but there's sort of this widespread sense that they're only there to entertain, that they have a certain very limited role in our, you know, in our society, that you play ball and you talk about the score and the game and strategy and things like that, and then you disappear. I think
right.
people have that opinion about the athletes themselves. They have that opinion about ESPN and the people at ESPN. They have that opinion about us,
right.
you know, but you and I, you know, we're going to hear that at various points during our career, because we are going to put ourselves out there and talk about the people and the situations that exist when, you know, the games are over, and when, you know, when it's not all about, you know, mm-hmm. how they entertain you.
Right.
And the idea that people are unwilling to recognize that it really is sort of a gladiatorial relationship that they have, that they just show up and they dash each other and
mm-hmm.
you know, for their entertainment, and then they walk away and act as if they don't have lives outside of that. The more people that understand that they're human beings that are, you know, that are playing these sports, that are participating in them, that are making a living and a life for themselves
right.
Out there, and that they're out there existing among us, going through the same issues that we have, you know,
right.
I think the better it will be. And the less willing people are to pay attention to that, the worse off they are. I mean, why would anybody think that this is an acceptable situation where people don't think of others as human beings just because they play sports and they make a certain amount of money and they're on TV all the time? And they take up, you know, 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon or whatever, that
right.
they no longer exist as soon as the final whistle blows. I mean, you know, this is a life, you know, this is a living, this is a society that we have. And, you know, specials like this, you know, they're not just important, they're necessary. They should really be mandatory when it gets right down to it.
Right.
You know, because it's not just about, you know, who won, who lost, how many yards did you gain, and what'd you do for my fantasy team? It's not that's not their reason to exist on this planet, and it's not
right.
our
They're human
reason.
Beings with feelings, just like us, and that go
yeah.
through things, you know, just like the rest of us. So I think they should, you know, be able to give their platform and voice. And I like what you said. I mean, unfortunately, I think a lot of times people see athletes as just athletes. You know, they just want you to play sports sometime, right? Mm-hmm. Or as you said, you know, get points for your fantasy team. But some people forget that after the game ends, guess what? They're going home just like the rest of us. And I think, and honestly, I always tell people, I mean, there is always going to be stuff that's uncomfortable to talk about. But to get to a comfortable point, you got to talk about it. And guess what? Everything shouldn't make you comfortable. You should be able to be uncomfortable. You should be able to have a difference in opinions and talk about it. See, I have no opinion voice in their opinion. That's when they get racist that I haven't, you know, I don't. That's threshold. But I think it's okay, even if you disagree with the pieces, but say why you disagree. But also, I think it's hard without giving it a chance. You have to give it a chance because, again, you can't tell these athletes anything if you haven't walked in their shoes. You know, I'm an African-American woman, but that doesn't mean I know what it is to be an African-American man. You know, that's different. I mean, yes, we might share the same race, but still, you know, it's everybody's story is so different. And I like that ESPN did this. And I mean, that's my next question, though, David. I mean, we talked about how you said it should almost be mandatory. So my question to you is, I mean, do you think more news outlets and organizations, you know, should do more pieces like this, not just in sports, but, you know, overall for society?
Absolutely. 100%. And I've always believed that. I mean, from the moment I got into the business, honestly, it's always been a matter of doing more than just telling people what happened on the field and coming up with a flowery description of what that was. I mean, you're telling life stories. You're painting pictures of life overall and of the people who are in it and the situations that they encounter. And the less educated we are about that, the worse we are and the worse decisions we make and the worse we treat each other and the worse we make other people's lives when it gets right down to it. If you're willing to just put everybody in a box and just say, no, you're in the jock box and you're in this box, you're in that box, and then how are you really doing? I mean, everything, I mean, I get that people want escape. You know, that's how, so they see the rise. I watch sports to escape from the world. It's like, well, don't do that.
Right.
Because they're part of the world. Okay.
Right.
You know, they're
exactly.
Not there just to get, they don't exist just to satisfy your urge to get away from things about them. You're going to have to address them at some point.
Right.
You know?
Right. And that's a great point because so many people say that, right? And that's like if you go to a bar, let's say, right, to escape from, you know, maybe you had a bad day at work, right? You go to a bar and you get a drink, right? But let's say a fight breaks out at the bar. Well, you might say, I went to the bar to escape. But guess what? You can't control other stuff that happens. And that's why I'm saying about sports, right? You go to watch sports, but guess what? You can't control what happens there. You know, sports aren't played just for you. I mean, some people might think that. But,
there seem to be a lot of people that think that.
Right. Like, and then if these guys have athletes, I mean, if these athletes have opinions, we all have opinions. And I think, you know, they should be able to voice it. And you might not like the platform, but again, sometimes it's being uncomfortable that gets us to talk about stuff. And obviously, what happened in the NFL was uncomfortable to some people, but it got us talking about stuff that needed to be talked about. Because for so long, you know, especially when I think President Barack Obama was president, I kept hearing we live in this post-racial society. And, you know, I think some people thought that. But I think now, you know, we see more and more. I mean, honestly, just go on your phone, go on social media, and you will kind of just see, you know, it's not really this post-racial society. And, you know, it's something that continues, I think, you know, that people are having difficulty with. But I think sports has that power, again, to just get us talking, hopefully getting the thread and needle moving, because sports has created change. And I think that's what we're seeing athletes doing. They're learning that they have a voice. You know, they're not just these athletes who make all this money and get endorsements. They're people, and they see issues like the rest of us. And I think if they want to speak out, I don't care what background they're from, what religion, what creed. I mean, I think they should have the same rights, you know, as the rest of us. So I'm completely like you. I like Dear Athlete, Dear Black Athlete. I thought it was a great piece. I encourage everyone to watch it. And hopefully it's not the last that we see of pieces like that. Because, again, I think we both said it, you know, more pieces need to come like that. And I think, you know, it'll help open people's eyes. And then you see another side of an athlete. And I think that's always important because it personalizes them more. But last but not least, David, I want to close out my show with my Woman Crush Everyday segment where I want to honor Sam Gordon, who I'm sure that you saw at the NFL Honors. She's a high school freshman, and she received the inaugural Game Changer Award during last month's NFL Honors program in Minneapolis. And I thought it was great because It came 5 years after she initially became famous as a nine-year-old. Yes, she became famous as a nine-year-old for competing in the UTE Conference football, breaking off long runs against boys on opposing defenses. So, yes, she was playing football. And the best part I thought about her story was that her dad, Brent, supported her. And I think that's huge. And then this led her to launch the instrumental Utah Girls Tackle Football League. So, yes, we have young girls playing tackle football. And I just thought it was a wonderful thing, David. I mean, she talked about how the numbers keep growing in the organization. Now there's leagues being formed in Indiana, Georgia, and Canada. I mean, wow. And I think what she's doing is just tremendous. And I think it talks about these kind of gender constraints that are in sports right now. And here she is breaking them apart, saying, who cares if I'm a girl? I can still play football. I can play football with you guys. But guess what? There's also a space where girls can play against other girls. And I think that's tremendous. And the fact that she got that so young, and some people can't get that as older people, it just speaks about this new generation. So what did you think about Sam Gordon and kind of all that she's done, David?
I'm kind of blown away by that, honestly, because you would kind of thought when that spot first came out, when you first found out about her, saw that first video of her, it's like,
right.
your first instinct is to think, oh, that's adorable, that's a cute little novelty, you know, but you don't put the expectations on her to, like, I mean, in so many terms, change the world, you know,
right.
When it comes to how we look at football and girls and gender and playing and where they belong in the sport. I mean, it was a huge sensation when she was literally just a little kid that she was doing these things. And to know now that it's like, no, she's now at the vanguard. She took it upon herself to be at the forefront of, you know, bringing girls into the sport, giving them opportunities to play the sport, to be part of the sport, and to move on into the inner workings of the game so that one day, you know, they're going to play at a higher level. They're going to get all the opportunities that boys and men have always gotten. That includes playing, college, coaching, administration, refereeing, training, all the things that, you know, you see here and there. Again, here's another sport where it's like, oh, the first this and the first that, you know, first,
there we go. Right. Another
first,
example.
First official year. Yeah. First, assistant coach there, you know, she is opening a door at such a young age to a generation of girls who can now do that. And maybe even bigger than that. And, you know, you see the idea of putting it and the whole idea of, like, maybe having, you know, really full-fledged girls leagues and everything, just ending the whole idea that football's for boys, you know,
and
that's fundamental thing. People can't get that out of their heads.
Right.
That football is a boy sport,
right.
And girls can play everything else, but football is off limits because it's for boys. And people can't even, I mean, it's as simple that people can't even get past that, you know, to sort of explain and say, well, why? Oh, it is.
Right, that's all they'll say, right. They really don't know that they're saying, oh, well, she's a girl. And I hate when people say, you know, oh, she'll get hurt. Well, each and every day we see injuries of men getting hurt. So, I mean, people are people, right? And I think, you know, if a young lady wants to play and learn the skills, and as you said, it might even lead to different careers. I mean, we're not saying all these girls are going to play professional football when they get older, but again, they can have that access to sports. It makes that pipeline. So they're already in that niche, and this can open so many different career paths. And that's all about access and opportunity, as we talked about for sports before, getting, you know, the Winter Olympics more diverse, access and opportunity. And here she is providing this access and opportunity to young females, and I love that she started it in Utah and expanded it out. And again, she's still young. She's a freshman, and she got this. I mean, the rest of us, this new generation is coming up and really letting us know, you know, they're tired, you know, of these constraints that have been placed upon genders and I think races and, you know, creeds. People are tired of that. You know, they're just saying everything should be for everybody. And I think that's what she's preaching. And I'm so proud of what she did. And I'm so proud of the NFL for honoring her on such a big stage. David, it was such a blast having you as my guest today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. I had a great, great time, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yay! I love to. Definitely having you back on. Believe me, Terps get preference on this show, so
you'll
definitely be back sooner than later. But I do have love for all colleges. But, of course, there's no place like Maryland. Look at me. I feel like I'm helping them with that mission, so I might have to call them and get my cut.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you again so much. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week, when I welcome in Charity Lynette, the CEO of Curvy Girl Fitness. Enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So, if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with K&N from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with K&N, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.